So welcome one and all to those of you who have downloaded our pilot effort at podcasting or broadcast if you've stumbled across this and don't really know what a podcast is. My name's Michael, I'm the manager of fwi.co.uk.
And I'm John Riley, I'm the news editor of Farmers Weekly magazine.
Howdy, John.
Hello there, Mike.
So these are obviously exciting times for Farmers Weekly, the Farmers Weekly group, stretching the boundaries of our traditional mediums or media.
Yeah, they're exciting times indeed, Mike. I'm really looking forward to this. It's one of the things that Farmers Weekly always tries to do as a magazine is go forward and stretch the boundaries. So we just want to try something new. I think what's probably nice for the user is that they get a look behind the scenes at what happens at some of these features. Sometimes they don't all go to plan, and we can give you an insight into what we do as in our day job, which we thought might be useful.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost like Farmers Weekly Unmasked, in that the information we're presenting is interesting, and also the way we gather it is interesting as well.
I think that's absolutely right, but please let us know what you think.
Yeah. And we'll be looking to put these podcasts out on a monthly basis, assuming this one goes well. Open to any feedback. You can email us on info@fwi.co.uk if you feel so motivated to. Right, we've got a couple of things on the menu today.
Yeah, we've got Food Miles, for a start. A big campaign coming up from Farmers Weekly that is going to really get the message out to the general public about how important local food is. We're really taking the farm industry forward here and putting it out in front of Joe Public, and we're saying this is what we can do for you. We can produce local food and we can save the planet in doing so. We've also got our esteemed editor Jane King will outline the whole Food Miles campaign much better than I have done probably, and talk you through the importance of it, who we've got involved and what we're trying to achieve.
And then as our second half of the podcast, I was let out of the office down to Sussex. I went to visit Andrew Pearce, who is our four-wheel drive expert, and we put a new SUV, the SsangYong Chiron, through its paces, so you can hear how we got on there and also get a glimpse into how we conduct these tests week in, week out. Right, as John said already, we've got a big campaign coming up, Local Foods Miles Better, and joining me in the studio now is our lovely editor Jane King. Hi Jane,
are you
excited to be on our number one podcast?
I am actually excited and a little nervous.
Well, don't be too frightened. Right, as I said, we've got this campaign coming up. So can you tell us a little bit more about it? For those listeners out there who might not know the term food miles, what is that exactly?
Well, it's a term that was created by a clever chap called Professor Tim Lang some years ago. And basically what we mean about food miles is that it's how far the food travels from the farmer to the consumer. So from the person that produces it to the person that eats it. And by and large, at the moment, people are quite concerned, and we're very concerned about food miles, because we've got an awful lot of food travelling an awful long way with quite serious implications for the environment and indeed for our rural economy.
Right, okay, but as far as our campaign aims go, we're not saying that we're against all food moving around the planet and the country completely, are we?
We're not against food imports, far from it, but what we are trying to do is campaign for much wider public awareness about local food and seasonality of food. I mean, our campaign has two approaches, really. The first thing is to improve public understanding about food miles and where their food comes from and the merits of local food. And secondly, to encourage farmers and to work with farmers to be more proactive in their local area at marketing their local food and getting these messages out. And we know from all the work we've done with farmers in the last 18 months, they would like Farmers Weekly to work with them much more proactively to get these messages out and to get a more positive message about agriculture out to the British public. And that's what we're about this week.
Sounds very good. Right, to kick off this campaign, we've conducted some research, haven't we?
We have. We did some research with NOP, the opinion poll people, and we just basically talked to a real cross-section of the British public. And this research was supported by Triodos Bank. And it's been really, really interesting. So it's uncovered some interesting facts about the public and their attitude to food. And what we discovered was that a huge percentage, 82% of people that we surveyed, would be much more likely to buy locally produced food in the supermarket if it was clearly labelled as being local. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of interest in local food. So by doing this research, we've been able to highlight some issues about public attitudes to this. And they would like farmers and producers to do a lot more to get these messages out so that they're more aware of what local food is available.
Also, I understand the survey showed a bit of a misconception regarding oranges and pineapples being grown.
It did a bit. There's a remarkable number of the British public that think that we can grow these wonderful fruits in the UK, despite the fact that it seems to rain every day. But
right,
there we go.
Yeah, they obviously haven't tried growing them in my garden because I'm not having much success.
In sunny Croydon.
Yes.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about what we're actually going to be getting up to during the course of the campaign? What's involved?
Okay, we've got a range of activity, both in terms of the products that we produce at Farmers Weekly, the magazine and the website and the activity that we do here, plus a lot of work going on externally, because this is about a very public-facing message as well as to the industry. And it involves the general public, producers and even school children. So we've got a whole range of activity going on at the Raw Show, including a schools competition, getting kids involved in looking at where their food comes from. And it's a lot of fun, but also there's quite a serious message at the heart of that. Mm-hmm. In terms of what we want to do with the public, we're really keen to get this message out about our research findings this week, and that will be through a lot of PR, targeted PR, through the national press, TV and radio. We've also got some activity on our website where people can register support for the campaign at fwi.co.uk. Mm-hmm. And we've got several months' worth of content building up throughout the summer in the magazine, which kicks off this Friday. And it's really all about energising farmers, giving them ideas, things that they can do, looking at farmers that are really actively involved in pushing local food and getting the Food Miles message out.
I can tell you there's an awful lot of effort going into it from the Farmers Weekly team, and certainly my inbox is full of Food Mile related emails. Anyway, one of the more interesting bits of the campaign is we're getting a few celebrities involved. So can you give us a few highlights, who's come on board?
Yeah, we've got some sort of what we would call farming celebrities, but I suppose we would, in the agricultural sector, we probably would regard them as real celebs. But in terms of sort of what we would call national names, we've got people like some of the celebrity TV chefs, Rick Stein, mm-hmm. Phil Vickery. Mm-hmm. We've also got Tom Parker Bowles, who's a food columnist for The Mail on Sunday. He's mm-hmm. actually Camilla Parker Bowles. So I don't know if you knew that, Michael.
He was on the telly recently, wasn't he?
And also Ross Burden, who's a celebrity TV chef. You see him a lot of the cookery programmes. And they're all supporting it, as well as other very influential people, like Sir Don Curry, Marianne Fisher-Boll, the EU Agricultural Commissioner, RSPB, all sorts of people up and down the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it sounds like the celebs are certainly coming on board. But how will we know if we've succeeded?
Well, we've got a number of measurements that we're going to make at the end of the campaign. I suppose the campaign's going to really last about 3 months mm-hmm. in all. What we really want to do is to have reached as many people in across the country as we can, and we're looking to reach millions of the British public. Mm-hmm. We would hope to be able to change some people's buying and eating habits as a result of this campaign. We would certainly hope to have encouraged farmers to be more proactive on it, to give them some ideas about things that they can do with their businesses to really market themselves better in terms of local produce, because actually there's a huge amount of momentum behind that and a lot of public interest. And it's really all about using every resource we can to extend the reach, used particularly with the wider media, to touch as many people as we can with these messages. It all comes to a head this week. Look out for Farmers Weekly on Friday and fwi.co.uk, where there's a lot going on. We're giving away free car stickers saying local food is miles better with this week's issue of Farmers Weekly.
Yes, great. Well, thank you, Jane. Yes, we look forward to hearing more from you, how the campaign's getting on, and perhaps a regular spot on the podcast. What do you reckon?
Well, I've got my confidence up now, I could do it.
Okay, cheers. And now back to John in the studio.
Right, now it's machinery time. Mike's off to Sussex, out into the sticks, where we really like to be, where Mike is going to test the Ssangyong Chiron. First look at that, and you hopefully will get your first insight into what it's like when we do one of these tests. Mike, let's off-road.
Right, thanks, John. Yes, I'm here down in sunny Sussex, and we're here to put a new four-wheel drive, the Ssangyong Chiron, from the Korean manufacturer Ssangyong, through its paces. And we thought it might be interesting to give you, the listener, an insight into how we at Farmers Weekly conduct these test drives to ensure consistency and accuracy. With me, I've got Andrew Pearce, who does the four-wheel drive tests for Farmers Weekly. Right, Andrew, you've had the Chiron for about a week now. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's a medium-sized car. It finds itself in the same marketplace as the Freelander and the Nissan X-Trail. I'm not really convinced that everybody will find its looks to their taste, but much more importantly, in a sense, because you don't see any of that when you're in it, is how it drives. So that's what we're at today, both on the road and off it.
Great. Okay, well, let's jump in then. Right, we're in the cab now, and looking round, first impressions. There's plenty of headroom. It's nice and big in here, and looking at the back, seems to be a reasonable amount of boot space. We've got sort of some angular grey plastic panelling, some clunky round dials and twiddly bits. The dash looks quite clear. And this model, this particular model, is the SE. It's got some leather seats on it, but can you tell us a little bit about the other models in the range, Andrew?
Yeah, so the three models, the base S, the SE in the centre, and the SX at the top. And the price range on the road, as automatics, starts at about 19,500 and goes up to 22,500.
Okay, what we plan to do this morning is to put the Chiron through its paces in the standard way in which we test our vehicles. We're going to do some acceleration testing, a bit of ride comparison. We're going to assess the handling on a nice windy bit of road, and hopefully do a bit of off-roading, an idea on how it performs under non-tarmac conditions. See if we can get it up a bank or two. Okay, we're just on a nice deserted stretch of straight road, and we're about to put the Chiron through its acceleration test. So Andrew, do you want to explain briefly how we're going to go through this?
Yeah, it's really quite simple. I've got a GPS unit mounted in the front of the car with a nice strong signal. I'll move up to a set point because I always do it from the same place. The GPS unit has a little bit of software in it which immediately starts timing when it detects movement. It'll go beep when it's reached the end of a standing quarter mile, and then we'll graph out for us the acceleration and the 0 to 60 and other intermediate times with any luck. We'll have to cheat a little bit with this Chiron because it suffers from really significant throttle lag. When you're standing still, you plant the throttle to the floor and then nothing happens, just nothing, for about perhaps a second and a half, 2 seconds,
right,
until the engine software thinks, yes, he wants us to go, and gets everything in gear and actually delivers some torque to the wheels. So what I'll do to get around that is to hold the car on the brakes. It's an auto, so I'll hold it with my left foot on the brakes, wind the throttle up so the motor is actually doing something, and then release the brakes and floor the throttle at the same time. So we should get around the lag problem that way.
Great. Okay, right, we're all ready to go then.
Here we go.
Whoa! Yeehaw!
That's exciting.
Right.
And it's revving to about 4,000 most. I've just left it in drive. There's no sport mode, so the gearbox is just doing its best to get us up there as quickly as it can. Now the beep's gone, so we're at the end.
We've done that.
Slack off.
Right.
And run one.
We're interested now in testing the ride of the Chiron. So Andrew, do you want to tell us a bit more about this bit?
Yeah, it's a standard piece of English country lane, really. In a sense, it's representative of many bits of lane. So the surface is pretty broken up, the camber shifts about, there are the odd potholes, ripples, all that sort of business. And by driving along it at a normal kind of speed, somewhere around 30, between 30 and 40, in a relatively short space, you can get a fair idea of the ride quality of the car. So that is how it absorbs bumps. It's pothole here, just a bang, and it dealt with that very, very easily. Mm-hmm. But this car particularly, having driven it now for a while, for a 4x4, it rides very stiffly, and the body control generally is not particularly good.
Right.
So that means there's quite a lot of sway in it. Mm-hmm. Small bump absorption is not very good at all, but right. Big bumps absorption is actually pretty good, as we discovered,
yeah.
Or just cross-checked back there.
Right, so we're going to test the handling of the car now.
Well, we're going to push it along a little bit. There's a whole series of different radius bends as the road drops and climbs, and so you just get an idea of how it transits from one lock to another. Through there, rolls fairly well, this thing. Coming down to a fairly tight right-hander.
Hey.
A squeal. And through the matching left-hander, another S coming up. It's rolling, it's fairly neutral, the steering is very slow, just no more or less than you'd expect from a 4x4, because it's not a sports car, so it copes pretty well.
So we're here in the Downs, and we're looking to looking at the terrain. We're going to need four-wheel drive. So before we start charging up the hill, Andrew, do you want to tell us what's involved?
Yeah, it's a fairly straightforward system by the look of it, nothing hugely complex. We've got a small rotary dial in the dashboard, nice and easy to reach, and the idea is that you can switch between two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive on the move in high range. But as with most of these systems, in order to get into low range, you need to come to a stop, you need the gearbox in neutral, and then you click the switch around. And after a bit of a wait, there's a small thud in the background, and the four-wheel drive low light comes on, and you're ready to roll. Oh, here we are then. We're just rolling on our way up to the test area. Very typical Sussex farm track. It's flinty, it's a bit rutted. So the thing that we're getting from this is that the body shell itself is very sound. There are no rattles, no squeaks, so everything seems to be put together pretty well. And the harshness in the ride, which is so noticeable on the road, is not so noticeable in these conditions. So on this kind of going, this Chiron is very happy. It's on road tyres, so when we actually get up into the steeper, wetter bits, we can't expect too much, but we'll just see how it does. Okay,
right, the terrain's changed a bit now. We're sort of onto a chalky scree. About to charge up our first bit of bank.
Oh, it's a very, very steady bank, this one. Shouldn't be a problem. It's an area where cattle are overwintered, and about three winters ago, they stayed up here for quite a time, and they completely stodged the place up. And so there's a very sharply rutted bit of track still that generally shakes your teeth out, if nothing else.
Oh, it's not doing too bad though.
Oh, well, it's easy going here.
Oh, that's a bit bouncy.
That's the place. That's okay, not a problem. So, the first area is a little bit of test of axle travel. And what it is a sharp angled drop off. And if you come at it across an angle, the front goes down quickly, which it's just starting to do now.
Yeah.
And the whole car tends to then tip over, nose down on one side, down on the left, and bring the back wheel off the ground, which in fact... Ah, well, this is not too bad, because in a lot of cars, over that little test there, mm-hmm. one back wheel would have been clear of the ground, and in some it would have been a good 6 inches clear of the ground. But this kept its wheel pretty much in contact. I was going to do it again, just mm-hmm. to make sure that I got it right. We've got a sharp little rutted climb mm-hmm. up at about a third of the height of the down, so it won't go on for very long, but it's rather slippery, so we'll just have a go at it and see what turns up.
Yeah, a lot of, looks like a lot of loose surface rather than wet and claggy.
There we go, at moderate speed.
Seems to be dealing with that quite comfortably.
Sailing up here.
Yeah.
There's more grip here than you think.
That's
because
not bad.
The rain that we had, being downland, it's tended to drain off it pretty quickly. So there is a fair bit of grip.
And then we spun it round and we're facing down the hill now.
So here we are, we've got a little switch, a push pad rather than a switch, as part of one of these rotary collections of switches on the dash. And I'll shove my finger on it, and HDC is lit up on the dash. Aha!
Oh, some clunking.
So, right. Now it's doing its job immediately. So we're rolling at very slow walking pace, and already you may be able to hear it. The brakes are coming on, going off, just to hold the car back at this speed that the system says is as fast as it wants to go. Right. So my foot's off the throttle, off the brakes, and the descent control is doing its job.
Yeah, if I just turn the levels up, I might be able to pick up that clunking a bit more clearly.
That's just the brakes coming on and off to hold it back. And of course, it's being able to do its job because there's enough grip between the tyres and the ground for the brakes to have their effect. Mm. And we're being held down this bank at a slow walking pace.
Yeah, I'd say about 2 or 3 miles an hour.
Yeah. So, yes, it does its job, and if you were a bit nervous about going down banks, this will look after you. And this, I think I'm right in saying, is a standard feature. No, the underbody clearance is not good.
No.
That shouldn't sit down on there like that. So you immediately see how it sat on the top of the ridge?
Yeah. Just trying to crest a small ridge and the bodywork's touched on the ground.
Yeah, it's more the underside of the car and the chassis parts. Maybe the gearbox cross member, something like that. So not over blessed with ground clearance underneath.
Right. Right, Andrew, we've done some ups, we've done some downs, we've done a bit of sideways. How would you sum up the off-road capabilities of the Chiron?
Well, it's two automatic systems help it greatly. That's the traction control, keep it moving when it's going up, and the hill descent control to slow it when it's coming down. It has not greatly endowed with underbody clearance, which is going to be a disadvantage if you want to take it anywhere that is a bit nasty.
We're back at the ranch now. We've had a good go with the Chiron. We've had it out in a straight line, gone around some bends, gone up and down some hills, and hopefully you've got a bit of an insight into how we put these vehicles through their paces. And specifically talking about the Chiron, Andrew, how would you sum it up?
Okay, well, it's very clear. You get a lot of vehicle for your money. You get quite a lot of space inside. You get a lot of standard kit inside. But for me, dynamically, in terms of its ride and in terms of its performance, and to some extent in terms of its looks, it misses the mark.
Thanks for that, Andrew. And over the next few months, I'm sure we'll be hearing more from him. Okay, so that's it from us here in sunny Sussex. Now back to you, John, in the studio.
Thanks, Mike. It didn't quite go as planned, though, did it? Mike's now magically back in the studio with me. I understand Mr. Sang-yong's getting his car back in two parts.
Ah, yeah. Not quite true, but there is a bit of a crack in the rear bumper.
bit of an issue with the ground clearance, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Andrew, we caught the bumper going up a hill on the off-road section, and it cracked. But in a way, it's quite good that it happened, because it helps to highlight that this vehicle has a clearance issue. It's a standard ramp that we went up, and Andrew said that all the other comparisons have been up there without a problem. So obviously that's why we do these tests.
Exactly, that's why we do the tests, so that you don't have to find out the hard way.
And we get to crash cars. Right, anyway, hopefully you enjoyed that bit with the Chiron. I enjoyed making it, but we had to condense it down a bit to fit it into this podcast. We do have a fuller length version that will be available later on in May on FWI. So if you go into the machinery section in the second half of May, it will be there highlighted in some way. There's also a bit of video footage I captured of the Chiron going up and down the off-road section. So might be interesting, might be worth a view. Right, that's pretty much it for this month. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed this one. If you have, you're welcome to download next month's, which will be available on FWI at the beginning of June. It'll be packed full of juicy features just like this one. John, do you want to give us a heads up on what to expect?
Yeah, sure. And next month we've got a look at country shows, and we'll be looking at Grassland in particular. And I think I've bagged myself a job of the century. I'm going down to see Philippa Vine in her kitchen, where she'll be cooking up something very tasty, I hope.
Yummy, yummy. That's right. Till then, cheerio.
Yeah, cheers.